Join the Pop Life Podcast conversation. Follow us on Twitter at The Pop Life Podcast. Find us on iTunes at The Pop Life Podcast. Be sure to rate us, please, and find us on SoundCloud and share and like and subscribe. Thanks.
Welcome to the Pop Life Podcast, coming to you from the Crosby Collective Studio, starring your hosts, Jeffrey Sledge, Naima Cochran, and Sean Young. If it's top of mind in pop culture, it's up for discussion. Thank you for joining us this week. The Pop Life begins in 3, 2, 1.
The Pop Life Podcast, today is December 10. I just know that some kind of way. I'm a little groggy because I stayed up mad late watching the Kanye Drake shit.
Nigga, no. I haven't been awake that late in a very long time.
What time was it over?
It didn't end until like close to 3. 2:30.
Was it worth staying up for 3 for that late
time? I mean, it was a spectacle. I mean, you know, I wanted to see it just to see it. I mean, it was on West Coast time. That's why it started so late. And then they started late on top of it being West Coast time.
Yeah. The nostalgia and the choir was worth staying up late. Drake could have stayed home. But
I wanted to be there.
Drake left mad songs on the table. It was really Kanye featuring Drake because, like, Drake left at least, like, literally 30, 40 songs that he didn't do.
Well, he was doing Certified Lover Boy stuff, and no one cares about that.
Yeah, he just did the new album. He didn't really do any of the old shit. Like, well, not even that old. He didn't even do, like, basic shit from, like, Scorpion. Like, he did God's Plan, but he didn't do, like, you know, just basic shit, like In My Feelings or Nonstop or, like, you know. He left a lot of shit on the table.
Everybody I saw on Twitter, and I mean, I think maybe, I don't know if we actually talked about it on air, but I think we all had a conversation that we feel like this was basically, I don't know, people said that there was a list of orgs that the money was going to or something, but I, you know, we all felt like this was probably something to put a little something in the family's pocket. But it, you know, Kanye, you give Kanye a stage, he's going Kanye, but it clearly was kind of like a, come on, help your uncle out. You're like, you know what I'm saying?
And Kanye did songs that, you know, you haven't heard, seen him do rather in a long time, like his classics, like, you know, Touch the Sky and All Falls Down and that type that you haven't seen him actually do, because he's always just been doing, you know, whatever his project is, records. He didn't really do much off Donda, maybe 2 or 3 records at that. It was definitely like Kanye's greatest hits.
It's definitely like Good Life and Jesus Walks and
exactly.
stuff from Watch the Throne. And
They didn't do Niggas in Paris. I was surprised that they didn't do a lot of
it.
They did Niggas in Paris?
He did his part of Niggas in Paris,
I missed it then.
So I heard he also pulled a Robin Thicke on stage.
Oh, with the
he's going to do that.
Asking Kim to come back. I'm really curious, like, so is she, because, you know, she was there, you know, obviously she, with the family and stuff, like, is she going to go, or is she going to slide back to the Pete Davidson shit, or I don't know.
I think the Kardashian ladies are in their, like, dirty white boy phase.
They're going back to being white women, period.
They lost the ass. Yeah.
With the exception of Chris. They're over the black shit. The tie.
Because Corey ain't fucking up that bad. Corey is there.
Corey is.
That's it. Corey's like, I'm just gonna sit here and be quiet. I never even heard Corey speak. So like, I'm not watching any of the program, but he's just like, I'm gonna ride this out. But yeah, I think the irony is that even when Scott Disick was stressing Courtney to fuck out, she was always like the least dramatic of all of them, right? Because, and even Kendall, she dates black NBA players, but she dates mixed NBA players. Like, she's like, even Kendall has like a lot.
Like, you got one black parent, and then the rest of the shit I ain't fucking with.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, it's, I think that also now that they're kind of getting older, that social influencer driven, stuff can't be their primary source of income, which means that all the tanning and the body mods and all of that doesn't serve them any purpose.
Now it's up in the clubs and all that shit.
That's why Kim's doing, you know, going into the law shit and trying to do, you know, she's trying to do upstanding white woman shit. So, yeah, that was they got a lick, you know, good for them. They fucked up. Like, the Kardashian effect on the influencer age and reality and
culture and
body mods and like all like they impact. I can't even wrap my head around. Somebody's gonna write a doctorate on this one day. I swear to God, because like it's real. The Kardashian effect is super real.
Yeah, that's real. It's definitely real.
But so it's interesting now to see them tapping out of it and transitioning to what life after is gonna be.
But the concept.
I think Kanye is a wrap because I feel like by the time Kim left, or by the time Kim filed or whatever it was.
Yeah.
I mean, think about it. She had tried to get him to go to treatment. Your man had just like bounced up out of state with four young kids in the crib. He's talking about their personal business on the campaign trail. Like, she had to be tired. She just had to be exhausted. And I can't.
Yeah,
I mean,
and then I think even without the fame and shit, just dealing with an unmedicated bipolar person in an interpersonal relationship like that is very, very hard on you.
Four children under 10. Like,
yep.
Yeah, they did have them back.
Yeah,
back
and then back. It's like, okay, you know, just like most niggas, it's like, I want you back. And when he gets her back, he's going to be the same nigga. He's not going to change. He's going to be like, he'll be cool for a couple months, and then it'll be the same old bullshit again. So I don't know. We'll see. But yeah, the concert was cool. I mean, they packed out the LA Forum. It was flooded. And the
LA has
the
some shows. Beautiful venues too, by the way. Not to cut they you do. Off, I'm sorry, but like,
no,
I would give anything to be in that Coliseum on that hilltop.
Yeah.
Like, it just looks so gorgeous.
Yeah, LA Coliseum, right? That's a form, LA Coliseum. Yeah, and the people seem to enjoy it, so you know, whatever.
On that note, one more thing, just yeah. LA, y'all are extremely dramatic with your bubble coats on at 54 degrees. Like,
you know.
It was not that cold for y'all to be wearing scullies and gloves.
They was out there. They was out there like it was that the concert was in Montreal.
Seriously, and I'm gonna give y'all shit every time because it's not cold in LA ever. I don't believe it.
Well, no, it does get chilly. It doesn't get
chilly.
Cold like East Coast.
You don't
cold,
need a triple vax.
But I've been in LA. I've been in LA like and gotten caught out there with not the proper attire at night, and it'd be cold. Like if you're not the proper attire, it'd be cold. Like it's like fuck. I mean, again, it's not like it's 20 degrees, but if you ain't
like,
you got a proper hoodie
off
on,
the coast is a lot. But also,
yeah,
like,
it'd be like shit.
A
it's
hoodie
cold.
Will do you.
Come yeah, on, yeah, a hoodie will do you. So, I want to jump right into some dramatics. So I don't even know. I guess because I was just. I don't know why, but I locked in, me and Inka were talking online about this, so I locked into the first two episodes of the Sex and the City. Is it considered a reboot?
It is. They changed their name, though, so it's called And Just Like That.
I'm a little surprised at how many people are locked into this because everybody was turned off by the second movie, which I never even saw. I didn't really like the first Sex and the City movie. Like, I didn't.
Which one was the one where they went to the desert?
The second one. I ain't watched that bullshit.
Yeah, I watched that one. So, it was terrible. It was terrible.
And that's terrible, but the fashions were giving.
I didn't even watch that. I wasn't even really a fan of the first movie like that. I didn't need it. The series could have been gone. Like,
the first one was the one with Jennifer Hudson?
Yeah.
Yeah,
and, yeah, with that ugly-ass Louis Vuitton bag that I would never get
over. Oh, yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And the thing is, like, this is, I guess, a struggle with content. It's like, when you love a show, you love these characters, you would like to see where they are further along, but revisiting too often kills something in it. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
It's sometimes better to leave it in your head, like what they could be, where they are, where they're not. Like, I'm going through that same struggle, not to go on a tangent, but they're making, they're supposed to be one last best man. That's about Quentin.
Yeah, I don't know what they're going to do with that because old girl's dead. I don't know what they're going to do with that.
Yeah, so there's supposed to be one last one it's supposed to be about Quentin, because if you remember at the end of the last one, Quentin wakes up and he's like, yo, you ain't going to tell you.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And
yeah,
I had
yeah.
forgotten that was supposed to happen. It should have happened already, but then Empire happened. So I'm of two minds even with that. Like, I don't know if I want to go back to them again, but also I kind of do want to see what happens with Quentin. But with Sex and the City, I'm just kind of like, we've moved so far away from their story.
But now I understand
it's them being old.
Yes, exactly. That's the thing. They acknowledge the fact
Yeah, no spoilers, been, sorry.
No, I'm going to try not to spoil it, but they're now, it's going to be tough not to spoil it, but I'm going to try not to. But they obviously acknowledge the fact that they are not those 30 something year old people anymore. They acknowledge it. They say many times, I'm 55. I'm 53.
Right.
Like, they acknowledge it. Like, we are grown. Like, we're not, you know, they're not in the streets, they're not in the club. You know, they're fashionable and all that type of shit, but they are middle aged women dealing with middle age issues now, you know, with grown children, yeah, with marriages and so on and so on. And honestly, I really think I was, because I went into it wild tentative, like, it's going to be some bullshit. But
yes, they teased it, in my opinion, but I didn't see any trailers or anything like that.
They couldn't. If you look at the first two episodes, you can't. It would be too difficult to.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Got it.
But in my opinion, the writing is very well done. Like, again, acknowledging things and moving the characters along in a fashion that makes sense. It's like, oh yeah, that would happen. That character would kind of do that. That character would kind of do that.
I particularly appreciate where they're going with Miranda right now.
Yeah, Miranda's dope.
Because that's kind of like she's like urban, middle-aged, leftist, white woman. And not getting it right, which I definitely appreciate.
Yeah, I appreciate that she's stumbling through that, you know? They got everybody back. Like, even the I don't know if that's Brady, but the...
They got Kim Cattrall back?
Oh, no, not Kim.
Cattrall, but they did...
But they handled Samantha very well.
In a very good way, yeah. I was really satisfied with what they did.
They handled the Samantha character's absence very, very well. I don't know if that's the original Brady, but the Charlotte's girls are the same girls. It's not, right? Because he's you know,
that's, Charlotte's that's girls kid are the same from, girls. If you watch a show called Life in Pieces, which is a hilarious sitcom.
Oh my God, Life in Pieces is the best show that I never knew existed and found like during the pandemic ever.
That shit is so funny. It came on CBS like maybe in the early to mid aughts, but that shit is hilarious. What, and the redhead kid from that is playing Brady.
It's what Modern Family would be if Modern Family was on cable.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, but yeah. I mean, it's just a lot of... another thing that they're doing, again, because they're moving the characters along, of course, these are all just my opinions, but is that the tone of the show is much more dramatic. It's not silly like it was because they were younger, so they were going through goofy scenarios in their late 20s and early 30s, like with the dating and all that. There is some humor here. Like, it's not like a drama, but it's just way more dramatic. It's way heavy. Not heavy. Heavy isn't the right term. But they're not playing it for laughs.
It's more like, somber.
They're just playing for laughs, like, because they have serious issues going on in their individual lives.
Okay, so I was just going to say, then I'll give it a shot, because I'll be very honest. I had no intention of revisiting that crew of women again. I had zero. But like I said, also, they did not, and that, I think that's kind of actually maybe doing them a disservice. They really kind of promoted it as a, like, they're back, Carrie's back, da da da. They didn't message it as a, like, this is what life, I mean, maybe they tried to do that by changing the name, and I already know the big spoiler in the first episode because everybody
was fucked up.
Was online sobbing.
And I was like, why is everybody crying at fucking Sex and the City? So
I was choked up like
yo,
I
hadn't watched anything, you know, so I didn't know. I really did not know that was gonna happen. I didn't know. I didn't watch the social media, so I didn't even see people might have watched it before me. I didn't watch anything. I just clicked on it. So when that happened, I was like, wait, what? He's gone?
So, and
the way he died was dramatic, bro.
Oh, God damn,
you're
Jeff.
You're spoiling, Jeff.
I'm sorry.
But, I will say it was really good to see Stanford Blatch character.
Because
we know the actor Willie Garson, rest in peace, he died earlier, I think this year.
It was this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it was good to see him, like a couple of older people. I'm really, really grateful that they did a show and not a movie. Because if they had done a third movie, I would not be checking for it. But because it was, you know, it's, I was like, series. Cool, maybe this is like, I could really get into it. And I'm glad I came back to it. Because I was all in. It came out in 98. I was like 16.
Everybody was
like
back
the
then.
Best shit
remember. I don't think Rabia will remember this, but I remember I stumbled upon it by accident. And it wasn't the pilot. It might have been episode 2 or 3. And I remember calling Rabia because I was like, with my sister, who longtime listeners of the show know, but y'all have heard Jeff refer to her as well. I remember calling her and being like, yo, there's this show on HBO, and it's like this white girl and her friends be in the meatpacking district and stuff like that. And they got this whole, you know, like fly ass dude with Mike. Like, yeah, like I was like, yo, you need to watch this show. And so, and that was before like it became a whole frenzy, but
phenomenon.
Even for me at the time, even though I was a black girl, I guess because I guess as a black girl in New York who was outside, like as a bougie black girl from New York who was outside, I could relate. I was like, this is my kind of storytelling right here. Not saying I could relate, like I was literally going through it, but on some old, oh, I could want to be Carrie with the Fendi baguettes and the, you know, the this and that. And the,
meeting up for brunch. Da, da, da. But yeah, but again, so it's really, the first two episodes are extremely, in my opinion, extremely well done. I'm not going to spoil anything else, but yes, a lot happens. The
biggest thing.
Yeah, yeah. But
now, so have y'all seen like Nicole Ari Parker and all of them come into play with it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really like her character.
And that's the other thing. That's the other thing too. And I don't think this is a spoiler, but they obviously have recognized that they did not have any diversity before.
Right.
So they have two black characters in this new one, Nicole Ari Parker, and I forget the other woman's name. But their characters make sense. It's not like it's weird. Mm-hmm. Like, what the fuck? It's like, oh yeah.
Carrie hired an assistant.
Yeah, like Jennifer, that was some bullshit.
Yeah.
These make more sense. So there's definitely more diversity. They're still living very, very rich lives. You know what I'm saying? Don't get it fucked up. So there's going to be, you know, only so much.
For me, I think it's just a tiny bit weird that Lily and Rose are still sharing a room in that big ass apartment that Charlotte apartment. Has.
Yeah.
They're so different and it makes no sense. That's the one part that I'm like, what the fuck is this?
I was gonna say something was gonna spoil, so I'm gonna let it ride. So anyway, so watching just like that.
Brady need his ass beat.
Yeah, I'm like,
the disrespect is another level. Now you gonna watch it and then immediately come to the group chat and be like, what the fuck?
Yeah, I mean, like, it's crazy. Yeah, so yeah, but definitely watch it. It's very well done in my opinion. I wanted to mention the Video Music Box doc.
I haven't seen it yet.
It was done by Mass Appeal and directed by Nas. And Nas also does a lot of the interview. Well, he does the Ralph interview. It's very, very, very well done. Very well done. I learned a lot about Ralph. I didn't know he was a DJ. I didn't know the stuff that he had done as a younger man. He talks about his life, his mom, who looks phenomenal. I'm like, your mom, how old is, because Ralph is gotta be at least 60 years old, and his mom looks amazing. I was like, so she's in it, his wife, his daughter.
Hey, sit down on that man, moms.
No, I'm gonna try to get out, but she just looks great. She just looks great. She's, you know, she's beautiful, she's sharp, she's, you know, it's Crazy Sam, all the people are there. Crazy Sam, Tuffy, you know, and a lot of Puffy, a lot of Jay-Z. They got Jay-Z to sit down. So there's a lot of artists as well that talked about the impact of being on that show had on them. And, you know, it's a very interesting show because, you know, it was literally the only thing we had back then. Before it was pre-MTV, pre-BT, pre-all that shit. So, like, well, not pre-BT, but BT was, at that point,
they weren't really doing video programming like that.
They had like Teen Summit and like Rap City, but like, you know, and Ralph also played so much local talent in New York.
Right.
And like, so like, you may talk about that and how he broke so many artists. And again, like, it was kind of like the only game we had. So, and then Ralph, I always thought it was so brilliant. And they talk about this, that Ralph would go to clubs and, you know, give people shout outs and go. So, because he was, It engaged the community because it was like, and when I forget somebody says it, oh, Fat Joe, he's like, yo, the nigga from Music Box is at the club down the street. We all going, right. You know what I'm saying? So like he would do that in these different clubs in the different boroughs. And, you know, so like people kind of didn't know where he was going to pop up. And it was very engaged in the community. It's a very well done documentary. It's very well done. I highly recommend it.
It was always funny to me, like, and I mean, I think that's also, like you said, the love of it is like, it was so, and I don't mean this in this, but it was very public assets. Like, it'd be Ralph in a loud ass club, literally broadcasting.
Yelling,
yo, Savannah! You know, it's 80,000 niggas. You barely hear the interview type shit. Mm-hmm. I would be like, what is happening right now?
Yeah.
Again, it was like community. You He was there. Yeah.
Yeah, he was that. There. Yeah. So I highly recommend this. It's easy
this
watch.
This was a national show?
Because no, it was local.
I don't know anything.
Was, yeah, you would know. Okay. As I say, it was only in New York. It was on public access.
But it was legendary. And you could call. So what happened was you would call in and you could punch in like a jukebox. That's all the video music.
No, that's the box. That's the box.
Oh, that's the box. Okay, my bad.
It's video music box. So
I don't know why I thought Ralph could do that too, but his was just the show.
Sorry. His was just the show. And so, like, you know, because it was just local, it was just in New York, but, you know, that's when New York was kind of like the epicenter of hip hop. So,
and now Ralph does, he actually does video DJing. It's interesting. He'll go to an event and he'll spin, but he'll spin and have the videos playing.
That's smart.
That he's.
But they talk about that on this one.
He did it at a, I've seen him do it at a couple things, but he did it. The first time I was at a thing for the Red Rooster. And he was opening. So, you know, I guess to try to give you like video music box feel.
The feel, yeah. Yeah. But I definitely highly recommend it. I want to be the old nigga. And I'm not trying.
You're always the old nigga, so why would you not?
Well, this is true. But I'm not trying to. Okay, so it's this
the old nigga podcast.
Exactly.
Literally the old nigga podcast.
Exactly. That's what we call it. So the TikTok phenomenon for, I guess, the past. Maybe a year, and you know, Inka, you'll know because you're so locked into TikTok. Is
2 years.
Everybody posts videos of them lip syncing somebody talking.
Yeah, it's called called a sound, right? Is that what's called?
Yes, you use the sound to make a video. Yeah, you can blow up the sound.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I find this fascinating because I feel like it's almost like. Kids, I'm gonna say kids, because not just kids, but people in today's world, maybe because of social media, and I'm talking shit, I'm no sociologist, but it's almost like you don't know how to express yourself
unless
you have to use somebody else's audio to express how you're feeling. And it's very strange to me how many people do this. It's like you could have said something similar with your own voice, but you'd rather use somebody else's voice.
It's not that. And I hear
break it down for me because maybe I'm tripping.
It's more about part of it is, I will say this. Part of it is the ease of being able to take something like how we do with memes and gifts and stuff like that and apply it in a way that it totally wasn't intended. Like the way we would use gifts and like you'll know that it weirdly applies to what you said, or even like a Nene saying, now, why is my name in it? Or you talking about something completely unrelated, but you use, I'm going to use Nene again because she's just so applicable to everything. Like the Ooh Child Ghetto Order, when she comes in and be like, not you got a white stove. So anytime you were trying to say something.
Girl, bye.
Yeah, but even like the scene where she comes in to see Portia, she like, oh, honey, you got a white refrigerator. We need to get you up out of here. You could apply that to anything that you think is distasteful. It doesn't have to be about a house. It could be about whatever, right? I did it about American politics one time. So
yeah.
So with this, it's more like, how are you going to adapt it? It's almost like acting, right? How are you going to adapt it to a different, out-of-context situation? You know, so it's more like putting your spirit. Would you say that, Inka?
It's literally, it's the same as a retweet or a quote tweet. So it's their version of like an audio meme. That's all it is. It's not like, you know, I have to say this in my own way. Like, you know how the girl who started the tussle thing? So I know you girls like to tussle.
The tussle, yeah.
Yeah, like you, it's not that you can apply that to a million things, but it's the same as like putting a picture of her face if she had made a funny face that would convey that on a tweet about like politics. You know what I mean?
Right.
But they're just using it like, I'm going to attach a video to it because this is the platform. Because
it sounds they're using, Jeff, the words they're using, it's not they're using quotes of like a speech or something. They use
it. No. They're taking stuff from TV shows or movies or whatever.
But I think it actually does speak to a higher level of expression because it's like, what can I, like, how can I more creatively communicate something, right? And it's also easier than, you know, it's people, the brain latches onto things that are already familiar. So if you already heard this sound, you're more likely to listen, watch something else with this sound than some random person, like, with their own audio, right? Mm-hmm. So it's also, you know, it's the algorithm, it's the engagement algorithm, but I actually kind of enjoy seeing how people flip stuff when they do it well, because I do think it's an area of the brain that we don't always use. And I think about that sometimes when we're just talking about memes and GIFs, like the way we use them to communicate. I'm almost like, what did we do on Twitter before we had this shit? Because you could just post, you know, or post a TikTok. Now the TikTok clips are becoming memes. They become Inception. It just,
Yeah, like I said, I don't dislike them. I just find it fascinating, like, because some of them, it's just like, I mean, there's always people who are just doing it just because that's the thing to do. Like, there's one out now about, where are you about to go? I don't know. Who are you going with? I guess I'll see when I get there. Where are you going with? I'll see when I get there. It's like a travel thing, I guess. So, I don't dislike them. I just find it fascinating because I just like, man, like, everybody just takes these little clips and just runs with it and makes up their own little, almost skits.
That's the point.
Yeah, I know. But, you know, social media is, you know, it's going to keep.
I think what you're talking about, though, applies more to how people just be posting random memes with words on them and not verifying source or accuracy.
Yeah, but I don't like that. The man does that a lot, Justin LaBoye.
He'll just
post, like, dude, you never give anybody credit. And I know you ain't sitting here making all this shit up.
No, right. That just feels like stealing. But TikTok kids, they're giving credit to, like, the original. You know what I'm saying? Even if they
the one thing about the sound is that it says who created the sound. Yeah.
They even with like a stitch, they're going to show the first 5 seconds of whatever video they're responding to. Like it. Yeah. Gen Z, they're very good about the
credit.
Digital autonomy, I'll say.
Yeah. I want to say rest in peace to Greg Tate, who was a writer. I don't call him a hip hop writer. I mean, he did write a lot about hip hop, but he did more music. He's a music and culture writer, yeah. But he did write a lot about hip hop because there weren't many people doing that when he first started. He died at 64 years old. I don't know what the cause was. I don't know if they posted what the cause was. But he's, you know, very well known music critic. Like I said, culture writer,
long time columnist for Village Voice.
Yeah, worked for Goods Voice forever. Just kind of like, you know, very known in the New York City community. Mm-hmm. Culture community. I just want to say rest in peace to him. Yo, I watched this Kenny G doc
on
HBO Max.
I saw the promos for that. It's on my list.
You know what? It was very interesting. I mean, he's like extremely wealthy, and you know, and it kind of gives you backstory on him that I didn't know. I mean, I knew he was from Seattle, but how he said his idol and what he always wanted to be was Grover Washington Jr.
I figured that.
He's like,
that was one of my favorite jazz people on earth. Loved Grover Washington Jr.
That was his guy. So he knows who was
the other person doing R&B sax when Kenny was coming.
Exactly. Yeah. So Kenny, you know, knows, you know, Coltrane and Miles, blah blah blah. But that he admits that that's not his influence. His influence was Grover Washington and a kind of like that quiet, stormy sound. And he said, you know, just like a lot of people, all he did, it still does, is practice. Is all he does. Right. He's like, yo, I could have done this, I could have done that. But I know I didn't do that. I practiced. He said, I could have been on a sports team. I practiced. I could have went to the prom. I practiced. He said, I practiced and gigged every way he could. And then, which was really interesting, though, was there were these music professors, college professors, and these music critics, you know, who were shitting on him.
Yeah, because they probably
But this is the interesting part. They were shitting on him for, you know, air quotes, gentrifying, you know, jazz and making it too corny and blah, blah, blah. But it's like, I really wonder if they did this on purpose. All the people that were criticizing him were white men. So it's like, you're doing the exact same thing as him.
But you know,
gentrified jazz and you feel the need to shit on this dude. You guys are kind of doing the same thing.
They don't see that because jazz purists are the only people bigger snobs than hip hop purists are jazz purists.
Mm-hmm.
Like real talk. And so I can see that with Kenny because honestly, one of the reasons that I don't like smooth jazz like that is because I grew up in a jazz household. So smooth jazz to me feels very canned and corny.
Mm-hmm. That criticism is really specific to white men because they don't like Michael Bublé either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
they didn't like Harry Connick.
Harry Connick. A lot of that, which is very
weird. They don't like loungy, like, whatever stuff. And I remember they really wanted to, when Latifah crossed over into jazz, they really wanted to come at her, but they couldn't because they had to admit, good. Like, oh, she's got the real actual chops. Yeah. She knows this shit. And
that Dana Owens album was actually really good. Shout out to Queen Latifah. Yeah.
And the other thing, so you said these guys are criticizing Kid. Now, again, this is why I'm not sure the people did, because they didn't have any black music critics or black. It was only white guys. Only white guys. And the thing about Kenny is, niggas like Kenny G. Black people like him. So they would kept showing his shows because he came up through black music. He has black people in his band. Like, black people fuck with him, so it was kind of weird
that
on the Quiet Storm, crazy that woman. What's the name? You remember Pat Prescott? She was a radio DJ.
I don't know if I remember her.
She used to be on BLS for years. But she was one of the only black people in the doc, and she talked about how, yeah, like, he came up, we started playing his shit. He talked about song.
His song, not Songbird, but there was another one that was the recessional or processional.
Yeah, they talk about that too. Yep, they talk about that too.
That
Silhouette. It's called Silhouette.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What a weird, like, critical dynamic for these white people to be such a quote unquote authority on this extremely black music genre. So much so that they want to exclude non-black people from this thing that they are proclaimed experts.
That's exactly my point. That's
so bizarre to me.
It's just like when I see white guys, critics or whatever, like, try to, like, shit on Drake as an example because he's not real hip hop. It's like, who do you even say that?
Chill out, Kenosha, right. Wisconsin.
You're like, who are you? Exactly. And it was really odd that they had that dynamic. And matter of fact, Kenny G's high school music teacher is a black man, and he was on it. He came on, and he was like, "Yo, I knew from the gate this guy was gonna be dope because he always listened to me. He practiced." Like, he always did what I asked him to do. Like, he helped him, like, really early on, like, gigging around Seattle and stuff. Like, so it's kind of like, and then they show people, like, going to the shows and talking to them in the crowd. And be black people like, nah, I fuck with Kenny G. And these are, black people. You know what I'm saying? This ain't, like, upperly bougie. He's just like niggas. And they're like, nah, I fuck with you. So it's kind of weird. It was just kind of weird to see that dynamic. And I wondered if they did that. I would assume that they were doing that on purpose. I don't know. But it was very interesting. But he seems like a really nice guy.
Kenny was wildly successful, period. But we were a huge part of his audience. We were a huge part.
And he totally acknowledges that. He's like, yeah. They are. Black radio, without them, he was like, without them, I'm not here.
Yeah.
They supported Songbird and all that stuff.
Kenny was a mainstay. Like, that's Kenny on my. That's, yes. Mm-hmm. Kenny was on.
Shout out to WHUR 96.3.
Yo, he's on Donda. He's on Donda. Oh, either Donda or the other one. What's the gospel Kanye album?
Oh, the
Jesus is King.
Yeah, he's on there.
Every saxophone you heard in the 90s was either Kenny, Branford, or Grover.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's very interesting.
Speaking of High School Music, though, shout out to the actress that's playing Lily in Sex and the City because she played the fuck out of that piano. Ooh. Killed
it. She went crazy. She went ham.
Really, she the went actress, ham. Too. Went
yeah,
crazy.
She went ham. She had me fucked up.
I had to watch it 2 times. Anyway.
Yeah, no, it was up. She was crazy. One more movie I watched that I know neither one of you, well, I don't know. I don't think you'll ever watch it. Okay, you might. It's a movie called Power of the Dog.
No. I did watch it. I had.
You did? Okay. I got my shit backwards. So it was, I like Benedict Cumberbatch, and he's the star of the movie. And I like Kristen Dunst too, and she's another star of the movie. So it's this movie about the Old West. They have
I had to rewind certain parts like 87 times because I was like, what the fuck? I was trying to do something and watch it at the same time.
No, you can't.
I was like, what is going on? And the only reason I watched it was because I saw it one day it jumped from like the number 6 movie to the number 1 movie on Netflix. Mm-hmm. So I was like, let me see what this is. But I definitely had to watch it multiple times. Yeah,
you got to focus. You can't. And it's kind of paced. its pace is nothing like this movie, but it's paced in a similar way to Passing. And it's kind of very, very subtle. Very, very subtle. Very,
it
very
kind
subtle.
Of reminded me of No Country. Like, yeah, remember No Country for Old Men?
Yeah. I love that. I mean, I love Paul Thomas Anderson, so I watch all his stuff. But yes, it's just, you know, they have this ranch to Montana, and then, you know, this the two brothers. One brother meets Kristen Dunst, who's a widower, and he marries her, and she has a son, and then they come to live on the ranch, and, you know, things happen from there. But it's really well acted, and it's kind of like you get kind of peeling back little layers, and then at the end, it's just crazy.
Like twist. You said, it's all a lot of subtleties, right? Mm-hmm. And that was why I kept having to run it back, because I was like, I kept being like, I missed something. But yeah, you had to really be locked in, because otherwise, if you're only kind of half paying attention, you just think the movie's weird. Like, what? I don't even know what's going on. Everything is very subtle. It's very subtle. Yeah.
Yeah. So, if you've got time to, I mean, you feel like, you know, but you got to lock in, like I said, you can't, like, kind of half watch it, but it's really
God
good.
Bless.
Got this crazy twist at the end. It's like, oh shit, that was ill.
Right. Which they never really put a point on, so they leave it for you to have picked
to figure
that
out. Yeah, and to why it happened and all that stuff. Cool. So, Travis Scott. So Travis Scott did an interview with Charlamagne Tha God. Yesterday, I think it was.
Yesterday,
the day before, or whatever. Talking his first interview since the Astroworld tragedy. In my opinion, this interview did not help him at all. He's very, and I don't know him at all, but he seems very detached and, you know, kind of just almost forced, trying to force empathy, kind of like trying, he was trying to act like he really gives a shit. He didn't seem like he does. Again, I don't know him, so maybe it's just his way, but the interview didn't do him any good. Like, it didn't get him any public support, in my opinion. And people
I don't think Travis is an emotive person at all. Like, it's just not, he's not the person you want to have do a sympathy tour.
Yeah, yeah. And, it was just, because again, he wasn't emotional. He was just kind of like, and then he really was skirting. He was basically blaming everybody else. Like, yeah, you know, I didn't know. Shit, I didn't know. It wasn't my fault. I would have stopped the show if I knew. And, you know, people online are like, nigga, there were ambulances in the crowd. What are you talking about? You didn't know.
He literally pointed out some of the ambulances. I think we know that he is known for doing whatever the fuck he wants and not listening to anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And this interview was a bad look, and he probably should have just sat down somewhere and remained quiet. Like, this was not. And then Charlamagne, of all people, kind of softball him through this, it was just weird. Yeah, I didn't watch the whole thing.
Exactly.
I only saw
why Charlamagne
was I didn't watch either.
They probably, which is probably exactly why Charlamagne was chosen, because they wanted a softball.
Yeah, they wanted, you know,
Charlamagne. They didn't want anybody who's going to ask.
They ain't going to sit him in front of Gail.
Gail would have been on his neck.
Gail would have had some material for them lawyers.
Well, and with the old auntie energy. Well, Travis, now. You know,
Travis. Now, if you look at this clip, you point
Travis,
at anyone
south. Right here, Travis.
At exactly.
Now,
this
why
moment.
Are you pointing here, Travis?
Explain at this moment here, what was going through your mind?
What did you mean when you said that you wanted to see people rage out, Travis? This has happened before at your show.
Uh-huh.
Happened. Yeah, that would it would have been that.
Travis, this ambulance is here now. Why would you not stop the show? So yeah,
and like peace to everybody that's really stupid on Twitter that's comparing this to Ariana Grande and the suicide bombing that happened at her show. When
it's nothing,
same, guys,
it's
like,
nothing the same. Nothing. It was ridiculous. A bomb at her show. She didn't rage.
Yeah, that was a terrorist attack. Exactly. It was not people getting crushed because, you know, inadequate.
They were raging
and
mosh pitting. I'm going to bring up this other thing. So there was a little controversy on the Twitter. In the Twitter sphere a few days ago, maybe last week it was, whatever, about how people split checks. So some woman posted that they went out, she ran up $1,000 tab with her friends or her coworkers or whatever, I don't remember which one. And there were people in the group that were like, yo, I just had a drink. I'm paying my, you know, $22.95 for my drink and my appetizer, and I'm keeping it pushing. I didn't tell y'all to run up this bill this high. I didn't eat nothing. Other people were saying, yeah, you know, if you go out with a group of friends, when the bill comes, everybody just put their card down and split it equitably. I think equitably is the right word. Yeah.
Yeah.
So if it's six of y'all and the bill is $600, you just put the card down, everybody pay $100. Well, regardless of what you had.
If you eat.
Yeah. Because I'm of that mind. I'm of the the bill comes, everybody puts their card down mindset. That's how me and my friends operate.
Same. That's how we roll.
But we also, we know this going in. A, we know this is how we move. Mm-hmm. And B, the consumption tends to be pretty equal across the board. Now, I have been in a situation where, like, I remember some coworkers asked me to come out with them. And I did, it was when I was still on the label side. And I did, because it was like, it seemed shady if I didn't. But it was one of those moments where my card was off for some reason. Mm. But I also just like wasn't, but they were going in. And I think I was on the Whole 30 or something like that. So I had like a salad or something. But I told them, I was like.
So there was also Mr. Chow shit ordering food.
Yeah, but I told them going in, I was like, I'm not drinking. I'm not really eating. I was like, so I'm gonna like slide one of y'all some money separately. Cause I was not trying, but I said it like way before the bill came. You know what I mean? Cause I wasn't.
And when the bill came, did they say anything about it?
No, because I already said something.
You got,
I said it from the outset. Yeah, I said it from the outset. So, and that's my thing. If you know that you're in a group setting and you're not eating, I think it's also kind of some onus is on you to be like, y'all, just FYI, I'm not ordering and nothing. I'm just here to kick it. So that nobody's looking to you. Like, if you wait, and that's the problem. People wait till the check comes and then all of a sudden it's like, well, nah, I just had this packet of sugar. And I did, and now like, nobody can remember if you're lying or telling the truth, you know, that type of shit. So, or
there's some common sense that comes into play too. Like,
yeah,
if and you one of my friends, she'll slide off
and ask for her check separately, discreetly, and just be like, you know, can you just pull mine out so that it doesn't become like a whole thing? And then she can say, I covered my shit already and be out. So it's like, I think that there's two parts to it. No, I don't think that you should have to put in, you know, $100 if you drank one drink. But I also think that you knew you only drank one drink for the whole time you were sitting at the motherfucking table. And you can communicate that ahead of time so that there's not chaos when the bill comes. Because
I also think there's something to be said about going to these kinds of functions with people that actually like you.
Right.
And are actually your friends. Like, if I'm going out with some new niggas and there's 10 of us and you run up $2,000 and I had a drink, I'm throwing a 20 down and I'm leaving.
Right.
There is no discussion. I'm not putting down a credit card for y'all to, you know, whatever. God bless. Yeah. Y'all figure that out. But, you know, my friends, my people that I would go to a giant, you know, table setting dinner party with, this is not an issue for us. It just does not exist.
I think the controversy came because the girl, I think the girl who organized the dinner was basically like, yeah, niggas was like, it was $2,000 and niggas don't want to ante up. But then people are coming to her like, yo, nobody told you to keep ordering food expecting everybody to pay for your extravagant meal. Like, why'd you keep ordering that much shit and expect people to cover portions of it when it was kind of... She was steering the ship.
Like,
she kept saying, bring more shit.
Oh, okay. But then, but then also somebody at the table should have said something, because if people weren't eating, my guess is that people were eating, right?
Yeah.
So it's like somebody should have said at some point, like, nah, we good, or stop, whatever. And again, it just comes back to, it's kind of like Inka said, I'm like, y'all people who go out to eat together, y'all must not like each other, right? Because otherwise, y'all grown-ass people at the table, y'all can have this conversation like, girl, it's too much food, or nah, I think we have enough, or... I'm like, whatever, right? Because I do understand how it can be. Me and my girl's greedy as fuck. We do a lot of eating and drinking out. So I know what it's like when somebody's like, oh, can you bring some more oysters? Oh, and can we get another bottle? Oh, and can we get another order of this? Oh, and can we get another side of that? Mm-hmm. But again, we all just mutually understand that when it all comes down to it,
we're gonna split it,
right? So, but if there's a case that's not gonna happen, like I was at a birthday dinner. We all agreed to pay a certain amount ahead of time. It was family style. But then they were going to order additional bottles on top of that. And I was like, just FYI, I'm not drinking on top of this. So I was just like, just don't include me in that part. And that's all it is. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, not because I was broke, not because I was, just because I wasn't in a drinking mood like that. You know, so that's, I just said it. I was just like, now don't include me in that part because I'm not drinking. That's it. So that's, I just think that people need to grow the fuck up, actually. Like,
I think this issue, and correct me if I'm wrong, Jeff, this is a thing that happens with like women and mixed company. I have no idea what happens when like 10 men get together and have dinner.
You know what happens when 10 men get together? It's 10 checks. That's what happens. Niggas just do separate checks because everybody, just, you know, you only have some French fries, nigga. So it'd be 10 checks.
But also, restaurants don't like to do that anymore.
No, they don't like to do that. They don't. It's a hassle. But that's what happens with niggas. There'll be multiple checks and everybody signs, and you know, niggas barely tip. That's what happens with niggas.
Wow.
Yeah, but I mean, I've seen both Greg sides.
I've heard some complaints about group male dinners. Yeah, I've heard.
Yeah. So, I kind of see both sides. But like I said, I've been in those spaces too, where like, people are ordering on and on and crazy. And I'm like, yo, I had, you know, the chicken and I'm kind of full and you niggas are still ordering steak and shit.
So not for nothing, I got stuck with that shit at your birthday brunch one time. I still don't know how that happened. Jeff,
the country cousin?
At the Cecil, yeah. And I was like, how I end up with the check math? And I still don't know who, but it was that. It was all of a sudden, I don't even know who I was at that table. But it was all of a sudden, like, I did have. And I was like, I just motherfucking got here. Okay, whatever.
I remember that. And I just said, I forgot about that. Yeah. I don't remember. Yeah, but, you know, yes. So anyway, yeah, I just found that kind of interesting because that's probably going to be happening in the next couple of weeks because of the holidays.
Just go out to eat with people that you actually fuck with and can communicate with, like normal as adults. Like,
hello.
Yeah. Hello. I don't know why people make dining out so complicated between the dating situation and the check splitting situation. I'm like, niggas, this can't be that. But also, when I go down south, though, I have to say, when I go visit my friends, and I've noticed this for a very long time, the mindset is still different because that's still a place where everybody's like, we need separate checks, we need this and that. And I remember, I remember going down, this was a while ago, this was like 15 years ago, and it was like homecoming, post-game, post-club or whatever, a bunch of us ordered from Waffle House, which was near our hotel. And I remember the order was something, it was a Waffle House price, it was like $30 for four people or something like that. And we in a hotel room with a gang of niggas, and I was like, somebody go pick up the food. But nobody wanted to come out of their pocket. I was like, it's $30. Y'all can't fucking pay fuck it, I'll pay it. Like, I was just like, this is stupid. This is so stupid that y'all want a nickel and dime $30. I was like, I'm going to pay for this whole shit.
It's insane.
This is silly.
Now,
it's so weird.
We've kind of evolved, especially since things have gotten much more expensive. But when we were all like single and, you know, district managers and retail managers, store managers or whatever, we would try to beat each other to the check. Like, one person would pick it up sneakily. And then we ask for the check at the end of the meal, and they'd be like, you know, it's already taken care of. You'd be like, what the fuck? Not again.
And then,
you know,
I don't want to pay. It's fine.
That kind of thing. So it's interesting to me that, like, the girl who posted the original tweet was calling the people she invited broke.
Exactly.
I was like, these aren't your friends, and why are you trying to break bread with them?
Yeah, that's weird. And then with the music business shit, when you had the corporate card, everybody would be trying to get to the check because everybody wanted the receipt for their expenses.
Right.
Then the bigger the receipt, especially way, 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 way back in the day.
Yeah, it always used to be
you get reimbursed.
Even if you split the check, somebody was trying to get the main receipt because there would be one receipt with the whole thing and then everybody's separate receipts. And somebody was always trying to grab the main receipt. So they could write
way back in the day, you would get reimbursed. So if I could catch a check for, you know, $650, I could throw it in there, even though I ain't spent $650.
Yeah, man.
Get that money back. But, you know, anyway.
I kind of miss working. Like, shout out to Petty Cash for shit like that.
I think and the statute of limitations has run out, so I can tell those stories now.
I've done run up some great dinners. Yeah. I treated friends to great dinners on corporate cards. Thanks, John Legend. Yeah. Thanks, Maxwell. Thanks,
American Express.
That was allegedly who I was with. Right?
Shout out to American Express.
No, that Amex, that you could pay the bill and that should immediately be applied to your account shit used to be the best shit.
Yeah, that was awesome. Chris Cuomo caught the fade. He caught the fade. So it came out that Chris Cuomo had been on the low, helping out his brother, Andrew Cuomo, who was accused of many sexual assault charges. And Chris Cuomo had been helping him out, having phone calls, Zoom, I don't know, Zoom, but phone call meetings, conference calls, trying to help his brother out, trying to get information while he was supposed to be an unbiased anchor at CNN. And Chris Cuomo was summarily fired, lost his severance package.
Then fired.
Yeah, first suspended, then fired. Lost his book deal, lost his severance package, which I'm sure had to be crazy. Severance had to be dumb because he was there so long and he was making big money.
He'll get another book deal, though. Yeah, he's been fired.
And you know what? And he had great ratings. Yeah, great ratings. Yeah, he's done. Somebody's gonna have to wait it out for a while.
Probably gonna
if Brian Williams made it back, he'll make it back.
Bruh.
He'll be back.
I don't know what they expect. He already wasn't covering the story of his brother, which drew a line in the journalism fans. But also, do you expect me to not help him? I don't know what CNN
expected. But I get it.
Maybe when this came out, they should have just threw something down immediately. Yeah. But I think they were probably just hush hush about it, and the shit got murky. And what do you do?
But as a journalist, I mean, I get how as a journalist for Chris, it depends on how he was trying to get the information, right? So was he using his, because if he's using his leverage as a CNN journalist,
he definitely was using his leverage.
Informant, his leverage. Yeah, it's like I get it. That blurs lines of ethics that CNN can't really afford right now. Because the other reason I think they came down so hard on him is because CNN is still trying to kind of clean up their image of integrity post-Trump. Because Jeff Zucker was largely responsible, who used to be the head of NBC for The Apprentice, who is now the head of CNN. And who was kind of responsible for taking CNN in kind of like a newsertainment direction, was largely responsible for Trump getting so much burn on CNN during the primaries and the beginning of the election before they eventually had a falling out. So yep. I think they're now trying to remedy that a little bit and kind of get their clout back. Because I remember when CNN was considered straight hard news. And now I was like, I don't even watch CNN anymore because I'd be like, I'll be on some bullshit. So
no.
I think
where is Anderson Cooper now? Sorry, not to cut you off.
Anderson Cooper's still there. But he's like the one of a couple, you know, because even Don, who now is like a serious journalist, clowned his way up into the anchor seat. So it's like, and you know, you got... But
Don's on the hot seat now too because his name was mentioned in the Juicy Smollett trial.
Oh Jesus Christ!
Juicy trial to bring everybody down. So
Mario's rolling in his grave, but I think Chris and Andrew will bounce back. It just might take a minute.
Yeah, it'll take a minute, but Chris will be back on TV at some point because again, he gets great ratings. He's really good at what he does. He's good. Yeah. He's good at being a news anchor. Yeah. He's smart. He's a lawyer. He understands how things work. So he's a good-looking guy. Like he's gonna be back, but it's gonna take a minute.
Say, he has a great face.
He'll be back. He'll be back. It's gonna take a minute. You know, don't cry for him. I'm sure he ain't gonna.
For none of them niggas. They are.
Yeah. Fine. Yeah. They are. Right. Yeah.
You know, they got all. They got all the money. They're fine.
Yeah.
Chris didn't all of a sudden have to him and his wife didn't have to sit down and like crunch the numbers on their budget because
he exactly. Oh shit.
We need to cancel the Netflix. They're okay.
Exactly. Call Andrew and get his Hulu password. I also wanted to mention I wanted to mention Insecure because they've literally got 3 episodes left to wrap up 5 seasons. Right. Excuse me,
An outstanding 3 episodes because niggas is on the ropes. Like I am upset with this season.
I'm like, do y'all realize this is the last season? Like y'all understanding? You really haven't had anything happen for 7 episodes. Nothing major. It's been 7 episodes of
cleaning up shit from last season because season was so explosive with so much change, and then this season's taking like a tiny little incremental change in every story for the first 5 episodes, and I don't know, man.
What do you think about the last episode?
I hate Nathan and Issa together. I do appreciate the growth that we're seeing in everybody. I love the girls' night, because I miss that with my friends so much. Just like getting ready together, and you know, there's something really special about them, like a couple of hours you spend together just as women bullshitting. Like, there's nothing like it. And I think they wrote that really, really well. I don't know. I ain't got it. I'm glad Issa and Molly are back together. I appreciate how realistic the relationship is with Lawrence and
Condola.
Condola, thank you. I've been trying not to say other things as her name.
Everybody else calls.
At least it ain't her fault. But I, it's messy. It's supposed to be messy. Like, I get it, but
it's just not. It's just not moving fast enough. It's like, okay, you're really down to the wire now. You got three episodes to wrap up five seasons of television, because you kind of wasted the first seven episodes with bullshit. Jason Derulo parties, getting robbed at homecoming. Like, what the fuck, man? Like, what's going on?
We needed the robbery, though. We needed a traumatic incident to get Molly and Issa back together. We needed that. It was absurd, but we needed that.
Absurd.
Because if you look at the last episode, like, season four, Issa would not have taken that advice from Molly, and vice versa, where she shouldn't have called Lawrence. Like, she's like, you're being inconsistent. That's what the fuck this means. And Issa was like, oh, yeah, you're right. I don't think season four Molly would have said that to season four Issa. So we needed that, like, little bit of growth to kind of keep the story moving.
What were your thoughts on Condola and Lawrence? Do you think at the end of that scene when they were like, you know, I really want you to be happy, was that him and her acknowledging that they're not going to be together? Or
it felt like
she said it almost as I don't know, bait isn't the right term, almost as kind of like she said it, it felt like to me that she was saying it, she could have been taken one of two ways, her saying it in hopes that he would say, well, you know, I could be happy here with you, or her saying it like, I'm not going to be with you, and so I want you to go on and do what you got to do. Go ahead.
I think the only reason that we would even take that any other way than how she said it was because we don't see Condola as or Condola with any other love interests. We know Lawrence has heartstrings tied to Issa. We know Lawrence, we've seen him dating, like, he's actively looking for some kind of connection, but we haven't seen that with Condola. So so we assume that she is she might be looking for something a little extra with Lawrence, because that's what we know of baby mamas and that whole thing in culture. But I don't think that's where this story goes. I think they're friends. Yay. Hey, Sean.
What up, bro? I think what happens is, this is my prediction. I think
they're talking Lawrence, about Insecure, Sean.
We're talking about Insecure, Sean. I think Lawrence and Issa will link up, but it's not going to work. And I think that Lawrence will end up, with Condola, because it's a family. I think him and Issa are going to do this one last dance and realize that time has passed. And this is my theory. I don't know. Yeah. This is my theory.
I don't think they tie it up in a neat little bow at the end. I think they kind of leave it open. But Lawrence and Issa are for sure going to cross paths again and speak to each other again. It's insane to believe that that's a clean break. But I don't think, I don't see him getting back with Condola.
Okay. We don't see it.
Because they weren't ever really together anyway. I don't think she was ever feeling him like that. And I think he could feel and see that.
Yeah, remember, she cut him off. Remember early on when they met, he was digging her. And she was kind of like, she's like, I'm not really looking for all that right now.
Yeah.
And he came back with being pregnant. But like, they were never, like you said, in a, like a full-blown relationship. But, you know, we'll see. We got 3 weeks. Did you watch Love and Marriage Huntsville?
I watched part one of the reunion.
What'd you think?
I think Martell needs some fucking help, bro. Like, that is just harder and harder to watch everything. Like, it's not funny anymore.
Yeah.
This shit is toxic and is yikes. And I caught myself watching the live of the baby mama. Seeing how she's talking about everything. And
what's she saying?
She's delusional too, of course. She was just basically confirming that everybody in the situation is single. She's like, I'm not back with Martell. Why would I be with him? Like, we ended things and we had a baby and that's it. He's a good dad. He comes over to get his son or see his son or whatever. And we respect each other. She was basically just saying, like, I'm single. But she was tired of her name, or not her name, but like being brought up on the show. And I was like, that's the whole fuck. Like, what are you even saying? Do you think no one's going to talk about your son or
him having a baby outside of his marriage?
Hello? Like, you're the reason they're not together at this point, anyway.
I always feel like that she's mad that she can't get on the show. She's never going to get on the show, but I think that she's like, shit, you know, I'm tired of being talked about.
And I would not say never.
Carlos King seems messy as fuck, and Carlos that seems King like a thing messy he would as a do. Motherfucker.
He's hosting the damn thing.
Also, who's to say that they don't, that Martell and Homegirl don't like fully kind of fall out and he goes back to old girl? Like, you just never know. Like, I would just never say never, because it's real life, right? Like, you don't know that.
Yeah, you're right. It is definitely real life. I mean, just the fact that he, you know, look, this is, you know, I obviously they're not together now, and Mel said, you know, I don't fuck this nigga on any level. Like, I don't even like talk this nigga, nothing like that. Okay, but just the fact that this is still your ex-wife, you are the mother of your four young children, and you're on TV pressing her about that she sucked the next man's dick. I'm like, bro, like, what are you doing? Listen, what are we doing here, bro?
Yeah, she absolutely did. She is getting that yam tenderized down to fufu. It's happening.
No, yeah, they fucked. Like, she's just trying to hold back.
Them yams is getting pounded, nigga.
Yeah, they fucked. She told me the guy ate her out, and I was it. You're right. Now, y'all fuck. Come on.
Well, that happens. That's what? Not.
We're that grown, does happen. Grown. That happens.
Okay, well, you know what? I'll defer to the ladies. I've never done that.
Like,
but
you
I'll
say, defer to wait, the ladies. Wait, 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 wait,
wait. He'd be all right.
He'd be all right.
And it happens at their suggestion. It's not even like,
listen,
maybe like I'm good. Okay.
Don't somebody send out that text message.
Thank you for your time.
That text message, and you like, yeah, come on, I'll come through. Spaghetti, and then there you are.
She said, "I just made some spaghetti."
Some spaghetti in there,
and you good, you lit. But yeah, that part one was wild, intense. And part two is, you know, obviously this weekend. More mess with, I think Miss Wanda and them on there this week. Destiny and
Miss Wanda. I can't believe they ever put her on that show. She is a disease. Wanda is a horrific person.
Literally the definition of a clout chaser. She's a clout, like you gave her a little bit of shine and she's taking that shit and run with it. Like, I am the superstar.
Weird, like how she came after Mel's mom in the park. Like, what is happening? What are you even doing?
Can I talk to you? Yeah, like,
no.
Mel's mom was like, nah, actually, no. And you see, I don't think Mel's mom is even on the reunion.
Because, like, the show is not about her. Because she has some sense.
Exactly. But Mel's mom is like, this shit about me, and I need to be there.
Cringe.com.
It's a mess. We got to talk about Juicy Couture. So, convicted of 5 of 6 felony counts. What?
Nothing. Juicy smiling. Go for it. Nothing. Okay. I'm being silly.
Convicted of 5 of 6 felony counts of, like, you know, using the police and like lying to the cop.
Lying.
Yeah, lying like a motherfucker. Yeah. I don't know when he's going to be sentenced, but and he got on the stand during this. Which is always a risky thing to do. And lie.
Stood on that lie, though. The part of the trial that spoke to me personally was him kind of yelling at the prosecutor when the prosecutor is reading the text messages to not say the N-word because it's disrespectful to Black people. But you created a crime, a fake hate crime, and wore a noose to the police station. And that's not disrespectful to Black people. But this person reading verbatim text messages that you sent is where we draw the line. Like, crazy. Sir, where does crazy. The absurdity calm down? Can we not?
What'd you think, bro?
I didn't really follow this as heavily. I mean, what do you, you know, what is there really to add? Like, what am I really adding to this situation at this point, right? Like, I almost feel like, I mean, look, I'm bugging that, like, my nigga, you're about to go to jail for real.
State like, prison like, in like, Illinois, fam. This is like, not a game. Like,
my nigga, like, you are not, like, that is just not a place that you're going to do well in. And no. At some point, I mean, listen, obviously, if he, let me also just say, I doubt highly that he gets prison time. I really okay. got a feeling that they're going to give him either probation, some really egregious long probation, like 10 yeah. years yeah. or some shit like that.
Community service, I'll pay a fine.
Yeah, yeah. he's going to have a bunch of restitution. And they might give him 30 in the county. They might send him down to the county for 30, let him sleep around for 2 weeks.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? Eat some bad oatmeal and some Snicker bars, nigga.
Yeah.
Sleep on that concrete and let you know what it really could have been like and then send you back home. But he ain't really built for prison. That ain't really his. Yeah. And this is obviously like some sort of first offense. Now, we know what it meant and what it looked like. But, you know, there's nothing for me to pile on about.
Yeah, he's on here.
Nigga did a dry run. I cannot.
Word.
I cannot.
Word. And it's on film. Like, did you think they kept in cameras anywhere in downtown Chicago, nigga? Like, what are we doing here?
Did he think that no one thought he was lying? Because I think we all at home, like, we knew.
Oh, we knew.
Almost immediately.
Just you lying your ass off, boy. Like, we're going to let it ride, but we know that you're lying. Yo, have y'all been keeping up with the food shortage stuff? Apparently, just, you know, like the chicken.
Yeah,
chicken
nigga, I go to the grocery store like 3 times a week.
Yeah, the chicken prices is through the roof. They say there's a shortage of chicken fingers. The fast food restaurants is having
chicken
problems.
Tenders are not in fact.
Yeah,
I mean, the wings are crazy. The wings are just crazy.
How much are wings now?
Dude, wings is about four. Wings is like $4.50 a pound, bro.
And what would they?
Yeah, I saw a 6-pack for $8.79.
Yeah, I think wings might have been like maybe like $2.20.
Damn,
you know what I'm saying? Dollars. Like maybe
we used to get them for like $1.99 a pound. Up
yeah,
here, like
so
when
like
first
two,
moved
yeah,
up here,
like $1.99, $2.20. You were kind of in that range depending on where you went. And yeah, man, like the packs of chicken. I saw a pack of chicken. It was 8 wings for $21.
What?
8 wings for $21, nigga.
Wow.
So I, again, this is the time where I count my blessings that I am, you know, I'm not really looking at prices, to be quite honest. I mean, I examine them, but I'm kind of blowing through the supermarket because I kind of get what I want. And I'm very thankful. I'm very thankful. And it's not lost on me that I'm able to do that. And that that's not a very common thing. So I have to understand my patience when there is someone blocking up the chicken aisle because they're looking for that dollar less pack. Right. Like that dollar less pack for them is a bag of rice also.
For me, what I noticed is the quality of items available is vastly declined. So they've
rapidly.
So, for example, like I could buy a steak before and not really have to worry at any store around here, Walmart, whatever, Price Chopper, wherever we are. But now I really got to be super choosy because the amount of times I get. Yes, it's very dirty, Ivy. The amount of. Times I get something bad home from the grocery store is like 3 or 4 times more than before. Even like produce, like bags of lettuce are already slimy by the time you get them home. Yep. That didn't happen before.
I got a skirt steak at the store on Tuesday. I saw it browning on Wednesday. And I and I went to the Whole Foods to the butcher to replace it because now I'm like, all right, I'm gonna go back to going to a place where I can see fresh cuts instead of getting
a package
in the freezer. Yeah.
And again, we say this completely. It is not lost that we are pretty much all blessed to be able to go in and make those choices because there are people who are not able to make those choices. And I see it quite often, particularly. So one of the things I do is I try to avoid the supermarket on Tuesday. And sometimes I just have to go. But Tuesdays are usually like senior days. So you have a ton of people on fixed incomes that are sort of bust in because we have a very big supermarket. So like neighboring towns, they have a jitney service that brings the seniors into shop. So I have to remind myself to be extra patient because that is a big difference. Like, yeah, sure, I can blow through the supermarket like that and not blink. That's not the case for everyone.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, people are really paying attention to these prices in the day. From the news reports I'm reading, it doesn't feel like they're going to level off anytime soon. It's just prices are going up. And even for the poor folks, I don't mean to position like that, but even like folks who eat a lot of fast food, you're getting nailed because fast food prices are also going up because of the lack of shortage. So like we're saying, like chicken tenders is more expensive now, and this is more expensive, beef and stuff.
So in a lot of places, things like WIC and SNAP and EBT, the restrictions are getting even more narrow. So I try to be extremely cognizant in the grocery store of not picking up a WIC item unless there's like 15 on the shelf, or anything that's marked WIC, anything that I know, like giant boxes of cereal and stuff like that, I try to just stay away from, especially if they're on sale, because people, this is the best they can do.
Yeah,
definitely am sitting in a space of privilege, even having choices.
Yeah, it's really interesting.
I was gonna say, it might ease up a little bit with Biden kind of opening up the oil reserve and lowering the fuel prices. Hopefully that'll make things a little easier on farmers and transport specifically. So hopefully this inflation kind of levels out, because November inflation was around like 6% in a single month, which is something we haven't seen in 100 years or something crazy like that. So
crazy. I also want to mention, this is a local story, but in New York, uptown where me and I live, what they've done is they've opened two places so far that are giving out free drugs because there's an increase of people using heroin.
Oh yeah, it's called a controlled something center.
Yeah, there's one here in Washington.
I think you have to use on site. I don't think you can.
You can't just take it and go to the street. So there's been an influx of heroin usage in New York, and so it's bad. It's like really, really bad. So it's gotten to the point now where they've opened
like these two sites. Back in the 70s and shit.
Yeah, it's bad. So they've opened up these two sites so people who are addicted to heroin can come, like Nye said, use on site, use under supervision, and so they're saying like that's at least we can do that instead of like people copping on the street. Of course, there's people who don't like this. People are like, you're making more drug addicts, and you're giving drug addicts more, free drugs, so they'll never be able to kick it. So it's a very controversial
position. I liken it to abstinence versus like sex education, right? And making condoms and other prophylactic things available to people who, even though you might personally morally think they're too young to have sex, the reality is they're having sex, so you might as well make sure they're good. In this case, when we're looking at fentanyl, leading to violent deaths, even with people who are casual users and not hard addicts, and when our streets have, it really be like some night of living face head shit outside. Mm-hmm. For real. for real. And it's so strange. I've been back in New York, you know, full time and not just holidays and summer since 96. And I have never seen it like this. Right. Bad. So it's like we weren't this bad in the mid 90s. I don't remember it being like this since I was a kid.
Listen, all over the country, if you look at Baltimore City right now, that shit is like the 90s.
I mean, you heard the man, the policeman in LA say, yo, don't come out here.
And they were like, we can't help you.
It's like the purge.
They're exaggerating, but
the drug use, not necessarily the crime part of it. But
go ahead, bro.
Well, I saw that clip and I just want to say that person is a part of a union representation, right? Okay. So there is some leverage in trying to scare the fuck out of you. And there is some leverage with him saying that, because if that impacts the municipal's, the city's tourism dollars, right? Like he now has sway at the negotiating table for his officers, for whatever it is they need. And they use that as a tactic all the time. They do work slowdowns. They do all sorts of shit to avoid.
Right. So
now, I'm not going to sit here and pretend like I don't see crime spiking, but I also think that it is also being over-exaggerated to some degree, and we are being inundated with what we're seeing. And so it appears to be more, but when we look at the spikes, they are not these rather significant spikes. And let me just clarify. If a town has one murder in a year, right? And then the next year they have two murders. Well, that murder rate has jumped 100%.
Double.
Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like, so we have to give some level of, what is happening here? What are the ebbs and flows? What are the context of these numbers? What does this mean? And as a layman, we're not often able to sort of extrapolate that information. But a lot of these places do that sort of shit. Like, don't come down here because some niggas ran in the Louis store. I mean, I guess. Okay.
He said.
No, I figured that was propaganda. But there is still more. There are still more people on the street in LA than there have been in really long time.
It is definitely an issue that needs to be addressed. It is also an issue that needs to be addressed in New York. This is an issue that is often hidden in New York because of the transit system. Because of the transit system, you're able to hide a lot of homeless people. Okay. Right. And because of and in New York, man, like they basically do Amsterdam, like the Wire, for homeless people. They'll shift them. So they take them from, they'll run them from Times Square and they'll run them down to the West Village. And they'll run them from the West Village and they'll run them to another part of town. And when the developers come over there and they start building, they'll run them to another part of town. That's all this shit is. It's a game.
And they haven't been able to do that lately. And now there's many homeless like encampments. Like there's a couple of, you know how where our streets diverge, there'll be like a little itty bitty sliver of land that they call a park in the middle of it. Like them joints is becoming, there's a couple of them around me where I'm like, okay, the Fiends is over there. I'm not going over there. And this area, especially on the side of Washington Heights I'm on, everybody tells me it used to be like the Walking Dead over here back in the 70s and 80s. And I gotta, you know, and they did a lot of work to clean it up. So it's still a little startling to see so evidently like people strung out on the street, right? Like,
laid out on the sidewalk.
And I want to be clear that I don't think we are, I want to be clear to our listeners that we're not conflating homelessness and being addicted to drugs, right? Like, we want to make sure that that's not, you know what I'm saying? Like, there are people that are the homelessness, houselessness, I'm not sure what the proper correct
house
term
insecurity
is.
Unhoused.
We're saying that is an issue, not in addition to, not as it correlates, not as a cause and effect.
You're right. It's there, and I'm sorry. And you're right. I should clarify. There are two things happening. There are a lot more. There's a lot more. What the overall thing I'm trying to say is that there are visibly more people on the street, right? So whether that be addicts and fiends and or the unhoused. I cannot remember a time in the last 20 something years where there have visibly, consistently been this many people on the streets. And one of the things that happened was, like Sean said, the city kind of bit itself in the ass because over COVID, because they were cleaning the trains overnight, they were more aggressive with getting
and shutting the trains down.
They were more aggressive with getting people who slept on the train, slept in the train stations out. They've taken a lot of benches out of train stations. They said it was for social distancing. It's really, there's a lot of little things you'll see in cities that you know is really to prevent people from sleeping there or spending time there. So now, you know, if these people can't be on the trains, if they can't be someplace that's a little bit secure for them, they're outside, you know, and it's more visible. So going back to the clinics that they're opening, my thought is, listen, if it can be safe and monitored, if, you know, you can have, I remember seeing somebody having to call the cops for somebody who they thought was like stroking out or overdosing or something out here like 3 months ago, you know? So if it can be done in a monitored way, I don't think that somebody who was completely stark sober is going to walk in off the street and be like, hey, I heard y'all giving out some heroin. Like, I don't think that's about to happen, but you know, I think, like I said, I liken it to giving condoms to kids. High school kids, even if you personally feel like they're too young to have sex, these motherfuckers gonna have sex. You giving them the condom or not is not going to be the difference.
Not gonna stop them.
Whether they have sex or not.
Yeah. Gonna stop them. Yeah, so yeah, I mean, I thought that was really interesting. Very controversial thing, but you know, it's noticeably worse than it's been in a long time. It's noticeably worse. You say you're seeing people just like laid out on the street, like it's bad and getting worse in New York.
Also, that's such like a tangible evidence of
right.
so many systemic failures at once.
Exactly. Like,
people, it's hard out here. So a lot of people went back to getting high because that felt easier.
Exactly. It was a kind of escapism. I want to try to end on something a little lighter. So y'all been watching Christmas movies?
I have. I watched a couple of them. I started watching them last weekend.
Okay. Anything good?
So I thought it was cute because it's a version of a story that I haven't really seen before. And it was told in a different way. It was Kathy and Jimmy and some other people, but it was about, I'm not saying this for our whole entire audience, but I thought it was cute and refreshing. It was about a gay man and his best friend. The gay man keeps having all these dating failures. It's a spin on like the single person keeps having dating failures and they go home and their family tries to hook them up, but they really want to hook the best friend. It was called Single All the Way. It's called Single All the Way. So it's the spin on the whole, you know, urban professional can't get dating right, goes back to small town, family wants to hook him up with somebody, but family is also like, why aren't you with your best friend? It was that, but the characters were gay. But they handled the characters being gay in a way like, it's funny because Kathy Najimy plays the mom and she's like, we have, you know, first of all, she's like, I want to hook you up with somebody. And he's like, yeah. She's like, you don't trust me? He's like, for this, no. And she's like, no, I understand now that just because you're gay and somebody else is gay doesn't mean that you guys are going to like each other. Like, they like some of the conversations they have, she's like, I read this book and now I understand that just because you're a gay man and they're a gay man doesn't mean you like each other. He's also like, anybody who's gay in this town, I'm not trusting. So they have like, I liked the way that they handled the entire thing. Like, I thought it was really cute. That was really cute.
I don't watch a couple on, you know, me on OWN. And
you watching the black people shit. You watching the Kelly Rowland joints?
I'm not yet, but I'm definitely gonna. I watch it.
If he has a whole series of them, right?
Oh, I don't know.
That's the third one came out this year.
Okay. It's called like a special little gift or some shit like that.
Okay. Yeah, something I watched the joint the other night. It was so silly. It was like the dude, him and his girl were air quotes friends. He was engaged to another girl, of course. And then, you know, she was a chef for a rich black family, and then the family went away, and he came over to act like they were engaged because she didn't want to tell her brothers that she was, you know.
It's always a pretend to be my significant other.
Exactly. And then we fall. It's literally that. And then they fell in love and he left his fiance now. He left his fiance because it was silly, but you know, it was fun. And I've been watching on OWN, they got a show, Kim Whitley got a show called The Big Holiday Food Fight. I'm sure even as an old nigga, I'm probably the youngest person who watches the show.
It's definitely you wild. That show is wild.
That nigga on the message board with Miss Jerry and Miss Earlene.
Talking about it.
Miss Jamie. I ain't like that either, Miss Jamie. I like when she made that pie. You know, so...
I'm very excited about this.
It's like a cook-off thing. It's just, you know, say black people and they get to win $5,000. Look, I'm not trying to... $5,000 is good. It's good money. But they act like it's like $5 million. They're like, ah! I'm like, I'm going to show you how black the show is, though. One woman, because they ask each person, like, what are you going to do if you win the money? You know, she said as an older black woman, I'm going to replace my stove.
I love it. Meanwhile, so close, like $500.
Speaking of Christmas stuff, the thing that I watched that I really, really enjoyed was called 8-Bit. It's on HBO Max. It's a Christmas story.
Oh, that's the Neil Patrick Harris joint. I need to watch that.
I really liked it. It made me miss the 80s and early 90s so much because it's all about Nintendo.
Yeah, what did he do?
I just got to ask because it was a Ricky Schroeder. You know, I get them white folks.
It's Ricky Schroeder.
Okay. All right, cool.
Yeah. No, don't scare me like that. I was like, what Neil do? Don't do that.
Neil Patrick Harris living in Harlem.
That's my nigga. Like, actually, don't scare me about Doogie. Doogie slash Barney. I can't.
Doogie was living uptown and apparently like conversing with the neighbors and be outside. I think sold that brownstone recently, but he had a big ass brownstone on Fifth Avenue and 126.
Him and his husband and their twins. Mm-hmm. I love, man. Yo, I saw a preview for it, or I think he was on New York One or Spectrum One or whatever they call it now, talking about it. With Doug Whipple, which if you're from New York, you know who that is.
George Whipple.
Yeah. But who I think is a terrible critic. But anyway, I definitely want to see that. And I love the idea of an updated kind of Christmas story-esque, you know.
Yeah, it was, I really liked it. I just put it on like folding laundry and I was like, oh shit, this is like, I'm into it.
Thank you for reminding me because I would have forgotten.
Cool. Are you watching anything?
Me now?
No, I'm talking about Sean. Is Sean watch anything?
No.
I don't really watch those movies. So here's what happens. I watch those movies on Christmas. Okay. So on Christmas is like literally a day of lounging. We usually do Christmas Eve. So we get up and then it'll be Toy Story, Elf, a couple black movies in the middle. You know, maybe we'll get something from paper. It's just movies all day.
I got you.
I'll watch one or two. I'll watch like one or two during that period, but I don't like set my heart on it.
I got you.
I think the kids will really like 8-Bit too. Like it's got some kind of edgy humor. I really liked it. I thought it was great.
Okay. So I'm very excited though for this Christmas movie with Nick Cannon and Jim Jones.
Hip Hop Christmas or whatever.
Listen, the Negroes have been churning it out.
Miracles on 125th Street, whatever it was called, and Ricky Smiley, and apparently also Lil Kim is in it.
Oh my god!
I sent it to y'all.
You sent the picture. Yeah.
I'm excited about it. Also, apparently, like it's some gospel artists. It's mad people in this movie, allegedly.
It's gonna be Lil Kim in it.
I think somebody said like Shirley Caesar. No, somebody or a Clark sister. Somebody's in it. I'm
Clark
ready.
Sister
ready.
Definitely.
Do they show? I don't see the one. What's the one that had Chris Brown and all that? Loretta Devine.
Oh, This Christmas.
I like that movie.
I like that movie too. It was on. Yeah. I want to say Cleo. The other day.
I saw it in the theater. I think I saw that movie in the theater when it came out. So next week, if we can get together to take, we should just kind of talk Christmas stuff, like favorite Christmas movies, favorite Christmas stuff. You know, keep it light unless something crazy happens.
Because I am not in the spirit. I don't have a tree up or nothing.
my goddaughter's here, and at first I was like, well, while you're here, we'll go pick out a treat. And I just can't, yeah, no, I'm not there yet. But I got my last piece of real work submitted at 4 a.m. So it's a 4 a.m. this morning. I'm done with heavy work for the rest of the year. I got a couple of on-camera things I got to do, but I'm basically done work for the year. So now I think I can maybe shift into a spirit mood. So I'm excited about that.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you. I'm excited. Yeah. I want it to be done like top of month, but I'm done. It's fine.
Good.
I'm going to try to
get it. So that's it. We're going to wrap it up. See you all next week, possibly, if we can get it together.
I feel like we missed something. I don't know what, but I feel like we missed something. So. Okay.
Oh. I wanted to talk about Abbott Elementary. Did y'all watch?
Oh, yeah. Oh. Yeah, that's really good. It's good. Really good. It's kind of like the Office kind of thing. It's kind of like they break the fourth wall a lot. You know,
The camera like and stuff. The fake docuseries.
Very
Parks and Rec.
Yeah. But it's really good. Everybody, they got a top-notch cast. It's Quinta Brunson's first TV show. She wrote it. She developed it, wrote it.
Carol Lee Ralph.
Tyler so James, what's his name? Tyler James
Williams.
Everybody hates Chris, he's super grown up now. No,
his comedic timing is great.
He's good. You know who had me cracking up to? The Italian teacher.
Oh yeah,
she was funny as shit. It's based in Philadelphia because that's where Quentin's from. Quentin's from Philly, so it's based in Philly, and she's like a teacher in this high school. This elementary school. And it's kind of all the stuff that they kind of deal with. But this is the first episode, and then it comes back on full time in January. But the first, I highly recommend the pilot. It was really good. It was really well done. And that's it.
That's it.
Wrap it up. And now you're on mute.
Oh, sorry. I was like, all right, y'all. I ain't had nothing special set.
We'll see y'all next week.
Later.
Peace.
Bye.
And that's what's popping in the world of entertainment. Thank you for listening to the Pop Life Podcast with Jeffrey, Naima, and Sean. Want to be a part of the show? We've got three ways you can get involved. Like us on Facebook. Send us your burning questions to poplifepodcast@gmail.com. And follow us on Twitter @PopLifePodcast.